Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, your weekly dose of insider DevOps trends, AWS news, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our SweetOps community. Plus a live Q&A you're not going to find anywhere else. It's December 20th, 2023. My name's Eric Osterman, and I'll be your host. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We're a DevOps accelerator. We help startups who are overwhelmed with AWS. We do this by using our over 200 Terraform modules for AWS that have been battle tested and downloaded. Gosh, I used to say over 10 million times. I think it's over 100 million times at this point. No matter where you find yourself on this journey, we're here to help your startup launch better products faster, free up your bandwidth for innovation so you can nail your value delivery every time. No matter where you find yourself, if you or your team has been banging your head against the wall with underperforming infrastructure, just head over to cloudposse.com/quiz. Answer a few quick questions and you'll get the chance to book a call with me directly. So how can you maximize today's session? First off, our format is very informal. Engage as much as you'd like, ask questions. And if you're curious about any of Cloud Posse's open source tools or modules, go for it. For those on the recording, we host these calls live, so don't miss out. Join us by going to cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, cloudposse.com/officehours. Now, I do have one ask. If you find any portion of today's Office Hours valuable, share it with your team. Just head over to youtube.com/cloudposse. Or share a short testimonial maybe about the value you're getting in our Slack team. Go to slack.cloudposse.com. Just want you to remember, we're not simply creating content here. We are trying to build a community, and we can't do that without your help. So with that said, here is the latest news and announcements. I'm sure if you're following LinkedIn or Twitter in the Terraform ecosystem, you saw that Mitchell Hashimoto has officially resigned from HashiCorp after 11 years. He was obviously one of the two co-founders. This could have been, you know, predicted for some time. They had a very planned out process here with Mitchell stepping down. What was it, in 2019 or 2020, from CTO to just a individual contributor?
Yep. And then shortly after that, he stepped down from the board as well and from all management activities.
Yeah. So the company has been running itself without his direct involvement or influence for some time. And he's done with it, I guess. He's found more interesting things. Also related, Matt Calhoun brought this to my attention. Mitchell is done with Go. So if you're depending on any of Mitchell Hashimoto's private Go libraries, Go modules that he maintains, those might be.
Yeah. So it sounds like, who would be relying on his private Go modules? But if you go look at the list, like Go Homedoor, as an example, is used in a ton of different in a ton of different projects that I've seen. And there's a couple others there that like are wrapped pretty deeply in other places. So hopefully someone's going to pick some of that up, but it's interesting that he would just archive those.
Wow.
I think Panic Wrap is also used pretty heavily in a couple of projects I've seen. That was the other one that was in there.
Yeah, I think there's in GitHub, don't they do a pretty good, I forget how you do it, but you can show all projects that depend on something.
Yeah, I forget how to do it too, but there is a way to do that.
Yeah, that would have been two. Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, yeah. 84,000 code references to Go Homedoor. Maybe that's loose. Yeah, it's just, it's not tightly exact match. Anyways.
Over 6,000 pull requests reference it at least.
Yeah, that's significant. So next up is something which is, it's a welcomed improvement in GitHub, but in my opinion, this is not what everybody has been screaming and shouting for. So one of the issues, right, is on GitHub. If you go to an organization like Cloud Posse that has a lot of repositories You're quickly overwhelmed with a list of hundreds of repos here that no great way of viewing them. Everyone has asked for a folder structure. Well, they have gone the nerd route and just added, filters, but I can't save those filters. I can't publish those filters. If they let me do that, I'd be a lot happier with this. So we could, help our community discover what we have by publishing pre-canned filters here on the left. It doesn't seem, at least at this stage, that you can do something like that. But you can add filters on things like properties. So you can define your own custom properties. We define one called type, and then you can filter by Terraform provider, CLI. But here's the thing. Yeah, that's cool within Cloud Posse. We know we have that, but every organization is going to have different custom properties. You're not going to know about it. You're not going to, maybe you would have thought to search for a different property name. So I think this is good from an audit perspective, maybe some sort of compliance perspective, but I think we need a better UI implementation for this. So we'll share the links to that. And that is a feature, by the way. You have to enable it. It's a preview, so you have to go to your personal GitHub profile and enable that feature flag if you want to see that. All right. Next up is it was yeah, just a pooping on Azure kind of post, but Microsoft bought LinkedIn. LinkedIn is therefore owned by Microsoft, and you'd expect them moving to Azure. I guess they've pulled the plug on that initiative for now. So they're going to stay in the data centers that they have, move certain ancillary services over to Azure. Doesn't make any mention that they're like going to Amazon or something similar. I assume they still have a lot of workloads on Amazon though, but the post doesn't talk about that at all.
Were they on Amazon before their data center?
I'm not sure at what standpoint, but I know they have contributed open source that I believe relates to AWS, but maybe I'm all mixed up.
Yeah. In reading
I
this, did
know.
you get the idea why they are abandoning? Like, I'm not seeing a head, like a bold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't recall.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, no, I should have been more up to speed on it. I was geeking out too much, to be honest, I confess, on something else, which I'll announce later on in today's thing. So I didn't go too deep on this one, unfortunately.
Yeah,
Sounds
good.
I
It's just.
know that I know that LinkedIn for a long time had actually used Mesos for their like workload orchestration. So I don't know if they ever like migrated off of that. So I wonder if that has something to do with this. Like maybe they figured out that it was like really expensive or time consuming and the benefits weren't that great or whatever.
But you can run Mesos in Azure, like, and it can't be that it's expensive because they're getting it at cost. It's
No,
this is
I don't
fascinating to
mean
me.
I don't mean like the cloud is expensive. I mean the cost of migrating the platform to another cloud might be expensive,
Engineering.
like in like engineering hours and risk and all of those kinds of things.
Yeah. I am so surprised because this is the type of like internal feedback that, hey, if you're Azure folks, you like want so badly, right? Like you could get direct large data center migration feedback, and maybe they have enough of it and it's not a big deal, and they're just like, yeah, sure, whatever, do your own thing. But yeah, kind of amazing.
So I
That
guess this
there
is,
are
yeah, go on.
okay. Oh, I was gonna say the yeah, so the other thing is that there are probably few organizations the size of like LinkedIn engineering, you know, that you would be targeting. You know, there's only probably a handful in the world, you know, that would be something like this. So I'm not sure that that's necessarily the case, but you know, with what you're saying, Matt, I agree. I agree. If it were like another tier down, that makes a lot of sense. But you know, you're talking like, you know, can I migrate LinkedIn? Could I migrate, you know, Netflix? Could I migrate, you know, someone of that scale kind of thing? And whether it makes sense to invest in that, who knows, you know, but
they have 10,000 repositories, you know,
yeah,
80% of which the people who wrote it are no longer at the company. And
yeah, like I know some stories from past relationship, and like GitHub Enterprise was like, LinkedIn was one of the first like real customers for GitHub Enterprise, and GitHub sent like a 10 engineer team to like sit in the LinkedIn offices for like months to fix like lots of problems they had to of, you know, doing things at the scale that they were doing it at, and et cetera, et cetera. So I think this is probably like everything at LinkedIn is complicated. And if you're talking about like, how do we take our entire cloud architecture and move it somewhere else, I'm sure that that isn't, you know, a trivial thing from a resourcing perspective. And what's the real benefit, you know, there? I mean, I guess the benefit is they presumably would save money, you know, by moving it to Microsoft, but is it enough to justify the cost and the risk and the delayed features that they probably wouldn't be able to deliver because they had to focus on this, et cetera. So, yeah.
Solid points. I think it's amazing. Maybe I'll redirect my amazement. They spent 4 years to figure that out, which must have been, you know, millions of dollars just in engineering time. And that's, I don't know, this whole thing, I'm going to look into it more. It's pretty interesting.
And Matt, it looks like the post really is on the surface, not going into some of the details. I think the most close explanation was this, that they were basically doing a lift and shift and probably realized in order for it to be feasible, they needed to do more refactoring than anticipated, than shifting.
Yeah. We need the Hacker News thread like we had for OpenBow, where LinkedIn current and former people are given the inside details.
Yeah. Honestly, there could be a thread. I didn't look it up. So on that news, like this one here was a Hacker News one where Microsoft was literally publishing 192.168.1.0 as one of its addresses. You could imagine the shock that some people had if that was resolving and suddenly the web server on your local Mac or whatever came up. But that was fixed relatively promptly. I just wonder what is the backstory? How does something like that happen to the top level domain, moneymaker domain for Microsoft, right?
Because at the end of the day, it all goes back to there are humans involved.
Yeah. and the haiku. It's not DNS, it couldn't have been DNS, it was DNS.
Yeah, exactly.
Another one of these supply chain announcements. These are getting so common, they're almost bored to announce, but pretty scary when you think about it, that 116 packages had been found compromised, affecting Windows and Linux systems. I didn't see a count for how many total downloads there were, but that would have also been an interesting factor. Here's something that I'm sure everyone who's using EKS is super excited about. Something, look at this issue. I mean, this was created March 5th, 2019. And it was just finally closed here yesterday as completed. So I don't know what kind of mountains they had to move on the back end, but they must have been monumental because here it is. And you can finally manage auth config or whatever sits behind it through APIs now for Kubernetes. And Terraform support for that is forthcoming. Apparently the PR was already sitting there waiting to be published as soon as the announcement was made. So here is, I thought I linked to the PR, but I guess I did not. I, I believe there's a PR sitting around here somewhere. Oh, this was the Pulumi one. Oops, I here is the HashiCorp provider one. This is though an issue and not a pull. Okay, never mind. I guess the pull request isn't yet there, but I thought it was. So expect to see that coming out then through the Cloud Posse managed EKS module as well for the cluster. Another nice little enhancement for AWS IAM Access Analyzer, adding automated detection of unused IAM roles, users and permissions. So if you have a lot of cruft building up, things that were abandoned, this might help you clean those up. The risk being, of course, that you forget about those and then some friendly hacker does not. Or maybe not so friendly. I was just reading, I should have linked the article that the criminal hacker gangs are moving from malware to extortion, leveraging the requirement of public companies to disclose potential hacks within a certain amount of time. So they will report themselves as having hacked such so-and-so public company, and they want to be paid off by the such and such company for delaying their disclosure of that. That was the gist of it. I thought it was kind of interesting. No honor among thieves. And here was what I was geeking out on before office hours today. I think this is pretty cool. If you're familiar with Charm Bracelet, they release a lot of great utilities. Bubble Tea is awesome if you want to create beautiful CLIs with that are interactive on the command line, color, and so forth. They have a project called VHS, like, you know, for all of us born pre-1980, whatever, you know, video cassettes that you could record anything you want on it. And this will record your terminal. Very easy to do. You just define a tape file, as they call it. It looks very similar to Expect if you've used that before. I'm working on one for Geodesic here. One of our tools. So the idea is, you know, if you have a command line tool, you want to have a screen cap of it to make it easy for people who discover your project to understand what it does. So you create a tape file that looks like this. And you set where you want it to output, you set the font families, you know, the replay speed, the playback speed, and then the commands it should execute. And the result is an artifact, which is a GIF file or a web MP4 file or a WebM file. And now you get, this is me testing here, some UTF-8 issues that I'm getting with glyphs, but you get something that looks like this more or less. And update it automatically with a GitHub action. So that is pretty cool. Here's Geodesic. Okay, yeah, so it's just broken after my test here. But better examples in the repo itself. So the VHS action here shows you how you can embed that. Yeah, nice little things. We were talking internally, it'd be really nice if this supported like ASCII NEMA style animated SVGs as one of the output formats, but unfortunately it doesn't do that. All right. Let's see, any other announcements on my plate? Yeah, last one, last but not least, OpenTofu, if you're following it, they moved beyond beta now to RC1. Hopefully, you know, it'll be soon that 1.6, the official release, will be coming out. This adds some mostly parity with 1.6 of HashiCorp's Terraform, including testing and the changes to how the S3 backend work. Also, if you are looking at signatures, they've changed how that works. So check that out if you're looking for this, the package signatures. So any other announcements catch your attention?
I did have one just around Ingress Nginx. I shared it in the Office Hours channel just a little before this meeting. It looks like if you're using 4.8.4, they totally pulled the Helm chart down because of an incompatibility issue.
Huh.
But I might be one of the few that was using it, so it might just be a me problem.
Well, it's a good public service announcement, nonetheless. All right. What's the main reason you're using Ingress Nginx? Is it just cross-cloud compatibility or?
Yeah, primarily. Well, I think they're all pretty compatible. I primarily just went with the Ingress Nginx, primarily because it's based off Nginx and it's their open source offering. I did not spend too much time looking at Trapeak or the other options. Just had run Nginx outside of Kubernetes before and primarily defaulted to that.
Okay.
What are you folks using at Cloud Posse, Trapeak or another option?
Oh, no, we always go for the native option, which would
like the application load balancer controller?
Yeah.
Got it,
so
cool.
It's managed by AWS, supported by AWS. If you have questions, you can ask AWS about it. I think that native integration, therefore, is beneficial.
Yeah, do you still have like route limits with I deployed the ALB controller a few years ago, but are there any route limits with the ALB controller compared to?
Well, there are limits on routes for ALBs. I don't think it would be an ingress limitation.
Okay.
AWS ALB.
The same limits apply though, right?
I was going to say the Nginx controller is spinning up an ALB under the hood, so the same limits would be in place.
Yeah. Okay,
so it still has a 100 limit there.
Yeah. Is that something you get increased, or do you folks does the ALB controller now like support if you go to like 200 routes or something, does it automatically do that for you?
It is not adjustable.
Ah.
So yeah, there are hard limits and soft limits, but this looks like a hard limit.
Yep.
Yeah. Honestly, most of our customers have ended up with.
Oh. I looked at the wrong one. So target groups, but rules. You can have more than 100. It's adjustable.
Yeah. Oh, I was also going to say most of our customers, like when they get that complicated, have opted for starting to split out their ALBs into multiple ALBs for different reasons.
Sure.
I think that's true. And I think, you know, when you get to that scale, there's all other opportunities, business maybe related, for splitting it out, you know, keeping internal traffic away from public external traffic, you know, sometimes segmenting it by region for, you know, because certain workloads are there. You might have yet another layer that sits in front of this. So you have your CloudFront or your global load balancer, which can also do path-based routing. So I think you have to have a lot of complexity there for those rules to exceed that, or to exceed those rules. Let's see here. Any, Michael, you shared this, Ziglang. I forget where Zig came up recently. Oh, this was one of the ones that Mitchell is fond of.
Yeah, sorry about that. My mic was in the wrong spot. Yeah, so he's developing a terminal application, and this is the language that he's using for that development. So you mentioned that he was moving away from Go and moving as a, I guess, result, moving towards this language and using this instead.
Interesting. So
Yeah,
not even
it's
Rust.
no, it's basically C++ or C under the hood. That's what Zig is. Zig is.
Where does Zig come from? Who was did it come out of any company?
I have no clue. When the announcement came out, I just kind of went down the rabbit hole and was following all the threads and came across this one. And yeah, I don't know. I just took it as more of like a, you know, how those academic languages sometimes pop up, and it looked like one of those. But yeah, I don't know what the support story is behind it.
Yeah, looks
Yeah.
like
So I was gonna say, Mitchell sponsors an oven there, or is the company that makes the bun engine, like under the hood? So that's the new, you know, it's a new Java runtime, JavaScript runtime, not Java, sorry.
not to be confused, open bow. A different.
Yes, this is put the bun in the oven, bun. That's why it's called oven,
But yeah,
the name
oddly
of
enough,
the.
their mascot looks just like the open bow
Yeah.
mascot.
Yeah.
Oops.
But they've been around for a while.
That is.
No mouth. No mouth on, or the
Oh,
mouth is
okay.
between the eyes versus the mouth being down there. But yes,
Yeah.
eerily similar. And the top of the bun is shaped differently than the top of the bow.
Very minutely, yeah, but yeah,
Yeah.
interesting.
I'm good at those spot the differences
Yeah,
games.
you if you can see the differences in this in less than 2 seconds, you're a genius. No, one of those tests.
Yeah.
What was I gonna say? All right, any other announcements?
Oh, actually, just because I'm doing it on my own personal machine, did you announce that Leap Team got released?
Oh no, I thought you were gonna say got acquired.
No. That would be amazing. They just came out of beta.
Yeah, I think we talked about Leap Cloud at some point, but I guess I didn't realize that it wasn't GA. So
Yeah, we had early access, and then they just pushed it out. I think it was like late last week, that it's now, hey, anybody can sign up.
how are you liking it?
And
What are you?
I haven't rolled it out to my full team. They asked me the same question, like the folks over at Leap, and I basically was like, hey, it's on my list for things to test out more in January, but now I was actually going to sign in and add everybody from my team. So I think it's useful when the one of the problems with, and you know, this is more of a problem that we run into, Eric, than a lot of other folks do, because hopefully folks are using SSO, and then all your like roles and like what's possible for you to assume is already pulled in, either in the console or on Leap. But when you're doing the Google provider, SAML provider login, whatever, not even Google specific, but and you have to add those roles that you can assume via the SAML provider, specifically, this saves you
That's cool.
the
Yeah.
nicety of having to have your whole team input the same roles over and over again. So I think there's value there.
I actually I should have probably brought this up too, because I've been using it personally just to like kick the tires on it. And one of the issues that I keep running into is that occasionally my like login to Leap cloud or whatever just isn't working anymore, and I can still make local changes, but then those local changes can't be synchronized to Leap Cloud. So then it gets into this wacky state where it ends up like deleting sessions that you created when you close the app and then log back in, because like there is no let me merge the local state from the with the cloud state, you know, the way that Terraform kind of works. It's either you're using all cloud state or all local state, and that's been kind of annoying that's happened. So to be fair, I haven't spent enough time writing up the scenario for them to report it, so I can't ding them too much, I guess, if I'm the only one experiencing this.
Probably the exact kind of fact they want to hear, though.
Or I know, it is. And, I also, just the other day, while we're talking about Leap, found another issue that I did write up because it was really annoying, is that they're using for their multi-browser session. Yeah, it's there, that one, for the multi-console browser. It's writing a bunch of Leap-specific cookies, and it's putting them in the .amazon.com like domain. It's not scoped down to even the console. And when you go to amazon.com, like the retail site, after you've been using Leap for long enough, it says that the size of the like cookie headers is too big and amazon.com won't accept them anymore. And basically their front end proxy like stops your, gives you like a 400 error. It doesn't serve up the site.
I have been running into this for months, Matt. So thank you for opening an issue. I'll go and give you a thumbs up. Yeah, I was wondering if other people were running into that. And then I've also had the issue, and I haven't written that one up either, but like of, hey, if you are already signed into a workspace, there's a state where my browser can get into where just it doesn't open a new tab or it doesn't open a new console. And then I have to quit out of my browser, reopen it, and then it'll start to work again.
Yeah, I actually believe that that is also somehow tied to those cookies.
Yeah, that would make
because
sense.
Because I had that same problem and I deleted all the Leap cookies and then I could open the console again.
Okay. And somebody else just said in the chat plus one on that new tab issue.
Yeah. So if anyone that's having
some
issue,
things to
go thumbs up my,
I'll link it in the chat too.
Yeah, do that. And just for everyone else, if it's not clear, Leap is a great tool for simplifying the process of logging into AWS. It's honestly the thing that Amazon should have natively out of the box. But it's taken about 15 years and finally a company frustrated, also with roots in consulting, I believe, came up with this. They didn't scratch their own itch initially, and then they formed a company around it called Leap.
Yeah. It, to be clear, it's also not only AWS. You can log into Azure and Google Cloud as well.
Yeah. So that, you know, there's a lot of part of it is open source, I believe, at least. But there's a lot of CLIs that do this. SAML to AWS is an example.
Yeah, or AWS Vault.
Or AWS Vault. A lot of those, though, rely on kind of like screen scraping, which causes services like Google to flag it as suspicious traffic. And it'll work until it doesn't. And usually it doesn't work for new people in the company who just need to get signed in. This works natively on your workstation. It will work with your browser. It also has a built-in Electron style browser. So it handles native authentication, doesn't raise those alarms when you use it. So that's why you would want to use this as opposed to something else. I think there's still members of the team. What's the popular bookmark? Chrome extension.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it. I was the one who like recommended it originally and I stopped using it. I can't remember
AWS
what it's called.
Extend switch roles.
Yeah, yeah. Extended switch roles.
Extended switch roles, exactly.
Yeah. So if you've been using that plugin, then you might become a quick convert of Leap because it's a better user experience.
Yeah. I feel like if this gets back to any Leap product managers, if they have to use this, reach out to me in the new year. I want to do like an hour usability call with them to say, like, here's a few things that you should really approve. I just I don't want to spend like 4 hours writing it all up.
That's really, they would be happy to hear that. They have a pretty open Slack channel I can, or Slack group I can send over to.
Yeah, I'll go with it. I'm just being lazy. I could do that part.
Now, if they could just integrate Leap with 1Password, so you could say, hey, here's the vault that I know this credential is in, and then it just prompts you for your 1Password. That would be yet another lazy level up.
Yeah, that'd be cool. All right. All right, before we get into Q&A, any last issues? I saw Bruce shared a new vulnerability in SSH. I thought we had announced this one, unless there's yet another one in the last 2 weeks. I'm just skimming. Bruce, do you know more about this one? All right. Well, yeah, we'll take a closer look at that. And it's amazing how SSH can't catch a break. All right. Well, let's jump into Q&A. Any questions we can get answered today?
Hey, I had a quick question. My team has recently started or needed to deploy our Terraform to multi-regions. Obviously know about Terraform provider aliases, and you can just reference the other region. But is there any recommendations that Cloud Posse has or anybody at the group that maybe makes that a cleaner process, or if there's any other options for us?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing would be an audit of what you have to make sure everything is designed to be multi-region out of the box. Like if you're provisioning S3 buckets, those need to be unique per region. Other than that, there aren't too many, I guess, restrictions. What we do as a convention at Cloud Posse is baking in the region as a short code. We call it a short code. It's something we made up that represents the region in every one of your resource names, so it's very clear where in the world that resource is deployed. If you use Cloud Posse's null label module, that's a great way to do that. Now, obviously, if you're not doing that now and you're adding another region, it would kind of suck to go do that retroactively in what you've already deployed, but at least consider doing that in all future deployments for what you do.
Okay.
In a does that make sense so far?
Yeah.
So null label, are you using null label throughout your Terraform code?
We are not. I've seen this before and I've thought about it, but we do not use it now.
So null label is critical, I believe, especially in, you know, team environments, because it enforces a consistent convention on how your resources are named. And if you use this religiously throughout all your Terraform code, it ensures you can instantiate your Terraform modules any number of times in the same account in any number of regions and not produce duplicate resource names. And if you just do string concatenation, in every audit I've done for an organization that isn't using null label, tremendous inconsistency for all resources deploys, all resource names deployed. Sometimes stage is before the application name, sometimes afterwards, sometimes it's camel case, sometimes it's snake case, and you know, it is like that. All right, but I can show you how we organize it. I'll just jump straight through to the good part. The gist of it is we don't use provider aliases. If you're using provider aliases to do multi-region, you're probably doing something wrong if your purpose of going multi-region is DR. So the reason to have a provider alias is so you can talk to N providers at the same time in the same scope the same invocation. So provision a database in US East 1, provision a database in US East 2. I'd have an alias for US East 2. I'd have an alias for US East 1, perhaps, or just use that as the default, and then provision the database in both places. And that works perfectly while everything is online and up. But if US East 1 is unavailable and you're having some problems, now your Terraform code is not going to work. So our strongly opinionated position on this, and we're about to go even deeper on this by segmenting our Terraform state by region, by account. But right now, the key thing here is the Terraform state for each region should be decoupled from every other region. So when you deploy that RDS database in US West 2, that is one Terraform state. That is one invocation of the root module. And you deploy it in US East 1, that's one invocation of that. And here's what that looks like when you do it our way using Atmos. So we organize your infrastructure the same way that Amazon thinks about your infrastructure. So you have an organization. That organization has organizational units. Ours is called Plat. That OU has accounts. Here's the production account. That account has regions. So we break everything down by region. And then here's everything operating in US East 2 and all the Terraform root modules. So an ACM component, an Argo CD component, an EKS cluster are all deployed in that region, in addition to all the other configuration that we imported here. So AWS WAF, SES, S3 buckets, the single page application pattern for our doc sites, for Cloud Posse docs, and for our Atmos documentation, ACM, and so forth. So that's all fully isolated, all deployed to one region. And if we wanted to deploy this to another region, we just copy that file, call it something else, and import a different setting for the other region that we want to use. So with that said, now we have a pretty radical approach to all of this. If you didn't start from the ground up, maybe there are other things you can do, and happy to try and brainstorm with you on what you currently have and how best to make it multi-region.
Yeah, so I probably should have been more specific when I started. We are not really trying to utilize a lot of regions. Like, we wanted an option in the future, but for ours right now, we are just looking to basically just apply config rules to other US regions. We've had, I guess, users that have accidentally found themselves in other accounts. So it's kind of just a one-off thing, and that's really just... it's just to get them at least compliant with our config rules that we have.
So you want SCPs, service control policies, and you want to prevent services in those regions. Matt?
No, that's exactly what I was just about to say. I was going to say, if you're trying to prevent accidental resource spin up in other regions, just use an SCP to disable that region.
Okay, and when we're aware of that too, and we just thought as an organization, we're not allowed to use them. So it's kind of, I guess, a gotcha for us. But
why would you not be allowed to use them?
I think it's just the security policy that we have. I don't know if it's exactly like a non-usage. It's just as a team, we haven't been able to use them.
That's kind of like, as a security policy, we only allow IAM users and no MFA. Sure, it sounds like technical, but it means it's contrary to secure.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. We have it disabled as an organizational level for our sub accounts or all of our accounts. So that's just a thing that we deal with.
Oh, wait, I'm a little confused. Were you using SCPs at an organizational level to disable things? Or at an organizational level, even SCPs are somehow disabled, which I didn't know you could even...
Correct.
Oh, wow. Huh. Interesting. Yeah, So for what it's worth, this is what the SCP would look like, more or less. And we have a Terraform module to manage that. And you would deploy that you know, per region to disable launching anything in that region. Now, if you are using AWS config, you'd want to add exclusions. You'd need to change this around. So you'd allow the security hub and AWS config to run in those regions, but nothing else.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was looking at. Like I saw the config aggregators that kind of allow you to do multi-region rules, but obviously config needs to be enabled in those other regions. So we still needed to run Terraform. We still need to enable them in those other regions for that aggregator rules to run. So, but I mean, that answered a lot of questions. So good example. At least.
And when we do Terraform in those other regions, we actually, each one of those regions is its own state. So we deploy AWS config with Terraform. So then we deploy AWS config in that account, in that region, and that's one state. And then we do the same thing for every other region. That way the Terraform code supports infinite number of regions. It doesn't matter. We don't need to make a single line of change of code of Terraform to support more regions. It's all configuration.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. Good questions. Any other questions we can get answered? I see there's something in the Zoom chat. Oh, what's the Terraform trope for put this in all AWS regions? Can you clarify for me?
Just kind of getting to what Zach said, if you can't use service control policies to put something in every region and you don't want to like Terraform state per region because you're just putting some like, you know, alerting rules in every region or something like that, what's the kind of best practice for that?
Well, I would challenge. So, I mean, I'll be honest, what we've been doing up to date has been a centralized state bucket with state pads per resource. However, we've done that more as a until we reached the maturity that we had a better strategy. And what we're looking at doing in our next version of our reference architecture is actually deploying possibly the state bucket in every single account in every single region. That way everything is truly decoupled, both at an IAM level, at a regional level. It simplifies so much complexity and buckets don't cost anything. Why do all this other overhead in IAM, which is error prone? And God knows we've taken that to its extremes. We're going to backpedal on that. So we used to do something similar to this, but then we stopped doing it because it was a difficult thing to solve in a cold start scenario, like when you start up a new AWS account. I don't believe that's still a challenge from a cold start scenario. Keep in mind that your buckets can be hierarchical. So you have your root state Terraform state bucket. And then from that root Terraform state bucket, you can provision as many other Terraform state buckets as you want. And then it's really easy to manage your state bucket architecture. It's only that first Terraform state bucket that you initialize that has a little bit of a smell to it because you got to create it without Terraform state. And then you got to import the state into the Terraform state. And if that doesn't make sense, then yeah. I'm happy to explain that more, but there's only a cold start problem with the first Terraform state bucket. So, yeah. But to your point, like with the SCPs, that would mean we would have to allow creation of buckets in all regions, even if we're not using the region. All right. Any other questions we can get to? This is totally open-ended, so anything goes pretty much, or if you have some other announcement that you'd like to bring up.
I do have a question. I don't know if anyone here has any recommendations on a open source project, but basically on my team, we've been assuming admin for various services, like various SaaS services. So it might be in the Okta group, we throw ourselves in a super admin group or in a GitHub group, elevating our permissions to be able to do things in GitHub. I was wondering if anyone knew of a framework or an open source solution that could be built upon where we can temporarily elevate our privileges for various services and then have them automatically revoked after like some threshold.
Oh, this has been a previous office hours topic. I forget the overall concept. The overall term for it is like just in time AWS permissions with approval. There's a couple open source projects.
Privilege account management. Yeah,
Cool.
I mean,
Just in time sounds like
Vault does that like pretty much everywhere. There's a bunch of other things, but Vault is one, or OpenVal potentially when that's released.
Cool. I wasn't even thinking about that for Vault. I use it for the minimum being secret management or just key value store.
Oh, yeah. If you already use Vault, then it's probably a no-brainer. There's backends for like a million different things, and you can basically just tell it to issue you credentials, and then it can revoke those credentials after a certain period of time.
Cool. I assume it's pluggable where you could write a plugin for it as well.
Yeah, like all of that. But I'm saying there's probably a GitHub plugin already. There's definitely an AWS plugin already. There's a bunch of other things for Vault to do that as from their backend perspective. So,
Cool. Thanks for pointing that out.
I found it was back in April we talked about no, not that one. Just-in-time access. So this was a commercial one. This was not the one that we was open source that initiated the issue. Let's see here. I'm
I
gonna.
can dig through office hours. I think with Google Bard, it might all be transcribed.
Exactly. And oh, here I linked you the thread in the Zoom chat to the session on April 26th and the links that we had there. So it's probably one of those links in there.
Cool. Thank you.
I just because I think it's really funny, I linked the AWS way of doing this. They have a blog post on it. And their architecture for doing it is so over the top, that it's worth just going in there for the chuckle. So
Yeah, with 10 lambdas and CloudFormation and everything else.
it's like deploy 15 services for something that we should have built internally.
Maybe it wasn't that in that I clicked through most of those and I didn't see it. But yeah, look around there.
Acronym just-in-time access gives me something to search for, though. I'm sure I'll find some projects around that.
If you do find something cool, bring it up.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Any other questions we can get answered today? We got about 5 minutes before our session is over here. Right. Well, anybody know why my glyphs aren't rendering in my GitHub action? I've tried setting installing the font packages and still not no luck.
I feel a little behind here. What is a glyph versus a gif?
Oh, glyph are like the little UTF-8 icons. Matt, what was the term you used for it? These little things here. This when it doesn't render properly, you might see it as like just this box with a question mark in it, and it's usually something with the encoding. Either the font isn't installed, or the wrong locale, for example.
Ah, got it.
There's another word for it, but I forgot what it is. All right. What was that? Well, thanks then, everyone. We'll wrap things up here for office hours. We'll have another session next week, same time, same place, even though I know a lot of people are probably checked out for the holidays. If you haven't yet subscribed to our YouTube channel, head over to youtube.com/cloudposse. We'll be posting a recording of today's session, as well as you'll find the back catalog of all past sessions on our YouTube channel. If you're interested in working with Cloud Posse or seeing if we can move the needle for you, please go to cloudposse.com/quiz and book a session. Looks like I deleted that URL for some reason there. But yeah, cloudposse.com/quiz. That's a good one. And to register for our live office hour sessions, go to cloudposse.com/office hours. Again, cloudposse.com/office-hours. Thank you all. See you soon. Bye.